Blog Talk Radio.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all your realty, financial, business, and entertainment networking needs. Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. This is Mary the Encourager. I'll be your host today, and I would like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about ThinkBigRadio.com. You have spread the word today, haven't you? Our co-host today is none other than Big. Are you here, Big?
How you doing, Mary the Encourager? This is Big here. I can't wait to get this interview started. I'd like to let everybody know that January we received over 28,000 hits. Hopefully we can match that or even beat that. Thank you.
Our guest today is none other than E. Everett McFall from Gary, Indiana right now. A teenage U.S. Marine Corpsman left the U.S. for a tour in Southeast Asia in 1966 with dreams and goals of someday becoming a doctor. Those 364 days in Vietnam forever changed his life as well as those whom he would come in contact with. And tonight we're going to learn more about that experience and about this person. But before we get started with this great story, let's share with our guests some contact information. Any listeners who are listening right now, get your pen and paper, want to make sure that you get this information. So, guests, Mr. McFall, will you tell us how our listeners can get in touch with you? What is your website, email, or contact number that our listeners might be able to reach you for questions?
Thank you very kindly, Mary, the Encourager. This is E. Everett McFall, and I have a website of http://EEVERETT/McFall, MCFALL.blogspot.com. That's EEVERETT.McFall.blogspot.com. They can also reach me by phone at 219-980-0422. Our email is info@ICanStillHearTheirCries.com.
All right. Thank you so much. We will go back over those again, but let me just say we want to make sure that you listen carefully so you'll be able to reach Mr. McFall late at another time and ask any questions or give any comments. So thanks so much.
Okay, Mr. McFall, I'm reading your profile here. I see that you'd like for us to call you Doc. So shall we start that? Is that going to be okay with you?
That'll be wonderful. A field medical corpsman is commonly called Doc by the Marine Corps, and as long as you don't call us late for chow, we don't mind.
All right, Doc, so before we really get into the nitty-gritty, why don't you let all of our listeners out there know a little bit about you, where you come from, and, let them feel at home with what you're doing here, because you're doing a lot of big things other than the book that you've written. You just have so much to share. So start telling us a little bit about yourself, Let it all out.
Okay. As a youngster, I was torn between music and medicine and my strong desire for the military. I call it the three M's. I was a teenage or a preteen and teenage entertainer in Chicago, Illinois, and that took away from my schooling to a great degree. And my grandmother pulled me by my process and by my ear and said, I need for you to tighten up and do something for me. And I made a promise to my grandmother that I would at least graduate. And I came out with partial honors, but I also made a decision that I would become a doctor. And so I joined the Naval Reserve while still in high school, and with the express concept that I was going to make a career of the Navy, become a doctor after going through college and medical school, which the military would pay for, and then I would have to pay them back 2 years for every year of schooling. Well, all this was my plan, and then I went to war. I went to Vietnam in 1966, and upon landing in Vietnam, my very first 90 minutes, I guess my plan was turned upside down. When I stepped off the plane in Da Nang, South Vietnam, they sent me and a few others over to grave registration area. And they said, we've got some Marines down here that are in parts, and we need for you to put them back together like a puzzle. And I had the corpsman, I told a couple of the Marines, line up these legs, put all the legs here, put the arms there, put the body trunk.
Wait, can we interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes, you can.
Oh, okay.
I can see already that you are a true serviceman, because when I called your name twice, you didn't hear anything. But when a woman said your name, it was right away.
Well,
I
hoorah!
Just,
I mean,
I want to
be a mic wasn't cued, but I didn't hear you, so no disrespect, Brother Big.
I want to just clarify one thing real quick. Did you say you got off and you went to gray or grave registration area?
Graves.
Graves
registration. It's an area that they designate where they receive the deceased bodies and they prepare them for shipment back home. They identify to the best of their ability these deceased corpses.
Now, I understood you to say that happened in your first 90 minutes?
As soon as I stepped off the plane, they marched us over to grave registration. You see, my group, the groups that we were, that all of us new people were being detached to, they hadn't arrived as of yet to pick us up. So until they did, our job was to help out.
I see.
Manual labor, so to speak.
Okay.
And so what I did is that we opened up the body bags and pulled out heads, arms, legs, and trunk, body trunk. Well, being the medical corpsman, it was my job to organize this puzzle reattachment. And so I carried the heads in my arms like you would cradle a baby. And looking down into the head and looking at a torso, I would say, well, this head looks like it belongs to this body. And the men would do the same with the arms and the legs. In that first 90 minutes, we were able to piece together 8 human beings, take each of those 8 bodies and slide them on a board, put them into another clean body bag, and into a refrigerated trailer truck. After 90 minutes, a Jeep came to pick me up. Doc McFarl, let's go. And so off I went. But that was my first 90 minutes. And I tell people jokingly that they should have put me back on the plane because I was mentally spent for life thereafter. And I say that because every day almost, well, not so much now, but I've been haunted by those heads for 40 years. And the title of my book, I Can Still Hear Their Cries, Even in My Sleep, those heads are just part of whom I hear. Obviously, they didn't say a word, but I hear their cries even in my sleep.
Now, what I hear from you, you've told us a little about yourself, in terms of your promise, you know, to what you were going to do with your life and all of that. And then to think that you're about to go off and to walk out and to serve the country and to, you know, get kick off your new life, and this is how you start, that had to have been very traumatic. And again, I can see from what I've read about your book that you decided to take that inner rage and to somehow use that to be able to help others, apparently. And it seems like, is that your passion? What is your passion?
I guess my passion is helping others, teaching, talking. I love to talk. And for those that know me, they might say amen to that. Once you get me wound up, I guess I just go on. I've always, because of my grandmother, wanted to help other people medically. So that was my driving goal, and that's what sent me to Vietnam. The events in Vietnam, however, took me away from the medical sense because of the traumatic type environment, or what is known as post-traumatic stress disorder, the nightmares, the sudden recall of events, flashbacks, just not being able to mentally deal with death and near-death experiences is what happens to a combative member of the armed forces. Now, it's just not combat. You can get PTSD from an automobile accident, a train accident, a severe traumatic incident, even rape, being assaulted, anything that would cause an abnormal type of mental occurrence within the body can be attributed to PTSD. I never knew about it until after 9/11.
Oh, I see. You know, I was going to ask you that because from what you say and what I saw in your bio, you were there in the 60s. And now, some 40 years later, you published a book, and you had published another book. So it took a while for you to come to grips with what was going on and to see how you could use that. Is that what was happening?
Yes, I was living in alcohol and denial.
Okay.
You see, everybody else, Mary, had a problem.
Oh.
If you knew me back then, 10 years ago, we might get to arguing suddenly or spontaneously because I would erupt for some reason. Maybe I was being protective. Maybe I was being defensive. Or maybe I just had a flashback and you look like the enemy to me. But everybody around me, friends, family, and whomever, you had a problem. I was the only sane one in the world.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to laugh, am I? No,
I can understand that, and I appreciate that. That's what led me to having over 44 jobs. And it was amazing when I began at the behest of the VA psychotherapist. They said, write down your job history. And so I started writing down, you know, I worked in steel mills. I worked as a taxi driver. I sold insurance. I worked as a chef. I worked as a baker. I worked as a car salesman. And I just kept on and on and on. And I stopped at 44. And here recently, within the last, I'd say, 2 or 3 years, I was talking with my wife, and I said, you know, I used to do that. She said, that's 45. And I said, no, I used to do that too. Yeah, that's 46. So as of record, I have over 44 jobs that I did. And it's been phenomenal. The longest job that I held was as a Cook County sheriff, carrying a badge and a gun. The shortest job that I had was sweeping up in a mortuary. That lasted 30 minutes when one of the bodies had a muscle flexation and stood up, and I was gone.
I don't know if I'm the right one to be the host on this call. I don't want to remember these things. But one
I
thing
will
I
counsel
do...
you. That's
okay.
what I do.
One thing I do see, though, in your writings is that you've taken a very traumatic experience and a traumatic life in terms of career and having to identify with it. But now, as I understand it, both you and your wife are students at Indiana University Northwest, and you're on the dean's list. And you've written two books. So you have found a way to bring forth out of that what some people would call despair something that is of benefit to other people.
Yes, and the first book that we wrote together is entitled Unselfish Love.
Okay.
It is a poetic journey of a five-year-old as to, it's a mystery of what happened to his shoes. So he replays the previous day in his mind, and at the end of the book, you find out what happened to Jordan's shoes. And
okay.
It's a display of his unselfish love. And this is done poetically, might I add. And it's not just lame poet. It's adventurous, it's comical, but it comes down to the point of this is what every one of us should exhibit, unselfish love.
Wow.
Okay.
Doc, let me ask you, what would you say to our listeners out there, because, you know, we've got another, you know, war with an S going on in different areas around the country right now. And from you being going through one of our last, you know, really deadly wars, and to see what's going on now, what would you say to our young servicemen who are coming out now that may help them or assist them with what they're going through or what they will be going through?
One of the first things that I would say to any young veteran from Iraq or Afghanistan is to go to other veterans, namely Vietnam veterans. Go amongst veterans and talk. We've been where you're at, and we've gone through what you're about to go through. To
wow.
the extent that this administration has chose to take these young combatants through multiple deployments, meaning not just one 12-month cycle, but two, three, and even four 12-month cycle in combat, leaves them a disorientated, hyper-elevated, mentally crushed individual. And surprisingly enough, they expect us to be normal the minute that we step off the battlefield. And we were trained to take life. That's what a military person is trained for. Their primary objective is to kill. And I specialized in to heal. But I carried a weapon. I carried several weapons because it's either them or me and my comrades.
Wow, Doc.
Let me just ask you, I want to just repeat again the name of your book, I Can Still Hear Their Cries, Even in My Sleep, by E. Everett McFall. And I want to ask you, is there a number, is there a national hotline or a number that if someone can identify with what they're hearing today, or if they know someone, that they might be able to give them some way to reach out for help?
We have a national suicide hotline that is open 24 hours a day. You will never, ever get placed on hold, and that's 1-800-273-TALK. TALK, the number for that is 8255. And that's at the National Suicide Prevention Coordination. It's a nationwide number to assist people. They have military people there to walk a person through, because they will ask, are you part of the military? Have you had military service? And they will immediately switch you to another military person who's been down that road.
Okay.
You know, Doc.
Yes.
I'm glad that you brought that up about talking to, you know, other veterans who may have, you know, who actually have gone through what they're going to go through, because I myself went through the first war out there in Kuwait. And a lot of things that you don't see or realize until after you're back and things happen, you're like, wow. But, you know, depending on, you know, the level of things that you went through, sometimes you may be able to cope, but it's always best to seek that assistance. Another thing that I would like to bring up for our listeners out there, they normally know that our shows last roughly 45 minutes, what we've been doing for the new year, but we had a couple of issues with the show starting of the streaming. So this here was going to have to be cut to 30 minutes. We have 7 minutes left. We do apologize, and we will definitely have Doc on again so that he can talk a lot more. But we're going to wrap these last 7 minutes up again. I apologize to you, but, you know, some things are beyond our control, the same as when you're put in the types of situations that Doc is now here telling us about. Mary, you have some more questions?
Yeah, in fact, because we don't have as much time, I wanted to get to some questions that people may be asking about how they can reach you. And I wanted to start by asking, is your book available nationally so that others could be able to get in touch with it?
Yes, we are exclusively on Amazon.com. I Can Still Hear Their Cries, Even in My Sleep, by E. Everett McFall. And they can also order from me to get an autographed copy by going to my blog. I would encourage anyone that if you went into your bookstore, simply say, I Can Still Hear Their Cries, Even in My Sleep, and tell them it's distributed by Ingram, Baker, and Taylor, the nation's largest distributor of books. And so if your bookstore doesn't have it, they can get it within 48 hours or so.
Okay,
wow.
Let me just repeat once again that if they needed to email you, they could also email at info@icanstillhearthercries.com. So that we want people that feel that this might be of help to them or to someone they know to be able to reach you. Because the things that I read said that this is the best book on the effects of PTSD that had ever been read, and that it's a powerful, poetic journal that is insightful, revealing, thought-provoking, timely, and therapeutic. And that was by the Vice President of Edgewater Mental Health Services. So I see that there's so much value here, and I just wish we had more time to really get into it. But I think for myself, just what I've heard from you, I know that there are people who could definitely use a way to be able to contact you through the book or through mail and to be able to move forward in their healing.
Yes, it has helped me writing this book as well as the next book that comes out. It's going to be Katie Bar the Door. The next book.
Is that soon? Coming soon?
It's 2.5 years away. But this book right here has helped me deal with my inner demons. So I tell all the veterans that are coming back now, get with other veterans. Talk, talk, talk. We know where you're coming from. We can help you deal with it.
Doc, I'm gonna put something out there that I noticed that you said when Mary the Encourager asked if there were numbers that we could call. You came totally out of left field from what I'd expect. You gave the national suicide line. Why? What made you give that number for, you know, for the veterans? Is there anything going on that we may not know?
Approximately 6,000 veterans a year are taking their lives. That breaks down to maybe 17 a day. And they don't think that anyone is there to talk to them or talk for them or to reach out. It is not all hopeless. When those demons start overwhelming them, when the surviving guilt where they're living and someone else isn't, a lot of their friends and buddies did not survive and were blown up right in front of them, bodies just ripped apart. It's hard to deal with. And they feel guilt, so they take their own lives.
Wow.
I don't want that to happen. It's very, very traumatic, and it shouldn't happen.
I appreciate your honesty and your ability to be able to translate your experience to be able to help others. And what I want to ask you now, we only have a couple minutes remaining. Are there people that you would like to thank who have helped you to get your passion out, help you to identify what you could do to help others?
Well, first of all, I have to thank God, because without God, I wouldn't be here, and without acknowledging him, my day would be still on drugs and alcohol. I thank my family that have been patient with me, particularly, and this is not a knock, but I've been married 4 times, and my present wife is the last wife, and without her by my side throughout the hundreds of visits to the VA, she's the spice that holds this marriage together. She's the glue. She understands more than anyone has ever understood the mental traumatic areas of my life. And I thank her. I thank people that took me in over the 5 years of my homelessness, when I slept in cars, in streets, in cardboard boxes, if you will, churches, basements, storefronts. It's been a struggle, and I'm grateful to humanity. I'm very grateful.
I want to tell you, we only have seconds remaining, and I just want to remind our listening audience that you're listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. In these remaining seconds, I just have to ask you, will you please come back again? Can we look forward to hearing from you again?
Yes, you can. We can. And I'd like to ask that if you and Big will send me an email where I can send you a copy each of my book.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I appreciate
that. And I thank you so much. You are listening to thinkbigradio.com, and we thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm sorry for the technical issues that occurred, but I think this is just the beginning, because we want the world to know that you can think big no matter what your circumstances. In fact, every circumstance has a way for us to be able to share with the world a little more about who we are and how we can help to better other lives.
Love,
so I just want to thank
radio.
You so much. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
And
we're still here.
And it ended, and it couldn't have ended on a more perfect note from the last words that she said before the Blog Talk Radio showed up. We're going to apologize. I'm glad, Doc, that you hung in there with us. I mean, we were actually talking 15 minutes before our show started. That has never happened since we've been doing shows.
Don't worry, these are things made by man and subject to all types of technical blips and errors.
And as you see, I mean, I don't know what could have possibly happened. I know we've been marketing like crazy. I've got, you know, my computer even, I had to shut my computer and the printer totally off during that time just to make it right. Now, we had 5 callers. And we only had one person live because when I do the advertising, a lot of the advertising I start like three or four minutes before the show starts so people will know. So everything I did up until that time, we didn't get the live callers that we were looking for because of the issues.
Right.
So even when Mike came on, you know, the first thing he was like, well, how can I hear it? Or what's, you know, he couldn't. So hopefully we'll get a lot of archives because we've got 48 hours. So if you can market it, you know, have people come and listen. It'll be live on all of our websites for the next 48 hours.
Okay.
Well, I thank you for everything. And I tried to get as many of the questions you had asked us. I tried to get, you know, some attention to those questions.
After I send you guys the book, you will form your questions.
And we give you that email right now over the phone. But if
the switchboard, Big, says show is on but not streaming. So
and that's just the same as it was earlier.
So it's not recording anymore.
It's not recording.
Okay.
You can actually send it to the same one that you signed up on, as far as for me. But I mean, all of us share that email address. That's hostthinkbigradio@gmail.com.
hostthinkbigradio@gmail.com.
Yeah, send that one there for me, and if Mary had an alternate because she might use one for her work or whatever, you know, it's the same thing, whatever she wants. But another thing is, you know, I can believe what you're saying about your wife, because when I called for you, me and your wife must have talked like we knew each other for about 30 to 40 minutes. I had to look up and say, what am I doing? I've got work to do. She is very, very sweet. I mean, you definitely have a real good one. And that's just, I could just see her heart, you know. And you don't get too many people come as close to Mary, but she's, if she's not tied with Mary, she's close.
What? Uh-huh. That came out of the blue.
I thank you.
But we're going to talk some more. I want to tell you one thing. I founded a program years ago called Families of Alcoholics,
uh-huh.
And Family Resources was the program name, and we provided seminars to help people to understand that when people were suffering through their own issues with addictions and trauma and all that, their family and the people who loved them the most were also having to deal with their own issues. So, you know, possibly as you continue with what you're providing, maybe there will be some resources that we have that might be able to help the loved ones of those returning veterans to see that they also, you know, have ways that they can make their lives more beneficial and more pleasant.
So I guess it's just a matter of time for you to agree to be on a guest on my radio program, Mary.
That's right. That's right. We're going to get there. I told you I have some information about veterans and businesses and all that. So I'm hoping that this is going to be our season where the four of us can all be able to continue and do some work in this field and, you know, help each other.
Okay. Big, I neglected to say the magic words to you, and I apologize.
That's no problem.
Well, you know what the magic word is, don't you?
Wait a minute now. I want to know.
The magic words are, thank you for your service and welcome home, brother.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't hear that. And I know we had a small parade as we were going back to the base. There was just some people out on the road, and, you know, they were waving. But, you know, other than that, we got back, and it was business as usual. And I still had I had about 4 months left before I was getting out. And I remember the staff sergeant walking into the barracks, and he comes into my room, and he's like, Blake, they want you down at the office. You know, I was just like, you know, for what? He's like, they got the papers down you for the reenlistment papers to sign.
Hey, I looked at him like, I don't know who you're talking to, but I'm not going to another war.
Yeah.
This lifetime, not unless I have, unless I can help it. I am not about to come for four more years. I made it out this time, and I became a corporal within those 4 years. And
let me check, Doc, are you still there? Okay.
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, because the switchboard had kicked us all out, so I wasn't sure. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I said I had a great life. I got my money for school, and that's it, because the only thing I can see happening right now is you guys trying to take my rank, or we'll be somewhere, and I swear it wasn't even a year. Maybe 2 months after I left, my unit went over to the African state to fight. And I was I woke up one morning, I was watching the news, and this guy's face flashed across the board, across the TV, and it was one of my close buddies, this Spanish guy, and they had been overran, and he was one of the guys that got killed.
Wow.
And I just had this feeling, this just dread just went through my whole body, and I was just like, it was just, man, it was terrible.
Well, one thing I would like to say, we thinkbigradio.com is going to be getting together at some point in the near future, and I hope that you and your wife will be able to attend when we, I guess, have our coming out party when we get together. So we'll let you know when that's going to happen.
Okay.
That's going to be in the Chicago area first, right, Big?
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
We're planning on.
Hopefully, I'll get a chance to meet you and your wife at that time. Because as I told her, she and I already have something in common. Our birthday's only 2 days apart, so we have to be kindred spirits.
Are you talking about my wife or Big's wife? Mary? Are we still there? Yes, it kicked us off. I guess it kicked us out.